Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, super important episode. Stop what you're doing and listen to every word of this. You are going to love it. But before we get into it, please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. At charliekirk.com/support, that is your portal to help support us. Our team, our researchers, our editors, the travel costs, everything around the production of the Charlie Kirk Show. You know, with all the cancellation and all the bad guys coming after people that are trying to tell the truth, when you support us at charliekirk.com/support, you are saying no to cancel culture. You are saying no to the digital assassins. You are saying yes to this program. And if you say to yourself, boy, I want millions of more people to listen to this program. I just wish my kids, my grandkids, my neighbors, and more students would hear what this show has to say. That's where it all is made possible, at charliekirk.com/support. As always, you can email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Action-packed episode, everybody. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for emailing us. And also, get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Can't forget that. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
Sitting in for the great Charlie Kirk. We're guest hosting for Charlie. Charlie's taking care of business. And as we know, Turning Point Action just announced an incredible amount of business yesterday, the $5 million partnership with Scott Pressler. Look, when you're watching the Charlie Kirk Show, when you're going to the Turning Point Action events, and Turning Point Action Act Con is coming up this July 14th and 15th, you have to understand that this is more than just paying attention to the news every day. And we're going to do that. We're going to analyze the news. We're going to analyze what's going on in Ohio, what's going down in Iowa, what's going on in North New Hampshire, what's going on in South Carolina as the 2024 horse race, the trail of the tape, if you will, is going on. But at the same time, you also have to understand that it's not enough anymore. It's not enough anymore just to be listening to the news passively. It's not enough to just be sitting back and saying, oh, you know what? These guys have taken care of it. No, you have to become interactive activists. You have to take the ball yourself and find a way to move it forward. If we're ever going to take this country back, understand what time it is. Know what part of the movie you are in. Three states. Charlie Kirk laid this out on the Great Tim Pool Show. Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin. You flip those states and then specific counties within those states that you can then micro-target, and demographics and bands of voters that you can go for specifically, doing the work now with the Scott Pressler's of the world. This is what TP Action is all about. And yes, there's going to be great speakers at Turning Point AtCon. You definitely want to make sure you come there. President Trump is speaking, I'm speaking, Charlie Kirk, Ben Johnson, so many great speakers, right? But even then, beyond the speakers, what's more important is meeting with like-minded individuals in your home area, in your hometown, or being able to find people that you can network with and then go back to one of those states, whether it be one of those three or whether there's one that's nearby. Those are the ones you need. We need 1,000 Scott Presslers to win in 2024. Are you going to be one of them? Because you need to be. Look, if they bring 2,000 mules, we bring 10,000. This is the situation. And look, let me tell you, I'll talk for a second about ballot harvesting. I hate it. I hate the entire concept of it. I find it morally repugnant. I personally believe, and I say this as a son of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I personally believe that we should go back to one election day. It's not election week. It's not election month. It's election day. I want to go back to that. I want voter ID. I don't want this universal mail-in balloting system, with this, which is rife for fraud. And it already is rife with fraud. We know this. We've seen the voter rolls. They're dirty. Go talk to Richard Barris. You will see this. Okay? You can see so much of this. But at the same time, when I hear people come to me and they say, well, we just need to go back to the old way. We need to go back to the old way. Walk me through how you're going to do that. How are you going to accomplish that, right? Strategy doesn't win. Logistics wins the day. How are you going to enact those policies in states that you do not control currently as of right now? The five states that the Democrats flipped, and we can get into how they flipped it, and 2000 Mules certainly does that, but I'm talking to you right now, logistically, pragmatically, in the real world. We have to come up with a plan to win if we are ever going to affect that change at the legal level that we all want. So are you going to play to win, or are you just going to play? It's as simple as that. And I know if Charlie were here, he would say the same thing, because that's why he had Scott Pressler on yesterday and went all in, $5 million just for the state of Wisconsin. And look, I want to hear from you. Charlie wants to hear from you. Send your emails in, freedom@charliekirk.com. We'll read the best ones on air. If you guys disagree with me, if you find what I'm saying to be so morally repugnant, and I'm admitting up front, I hate the entire concept of ballot harvesting. I believe it should be one man, one vote, one woman, one vote, that you should be able, and you should go through the American tradition, because it is a civic tradition. It was a civic tradition in this country for hundreds of years, that you go and vote at the polls on election day. You wait in line. You meet people. And that was the original election integrity, right? The original election integrity. Think, before we had, driver's licenses and state IDs and this thing, the original election integrity was that you knew the people in your community. Because each precinct, the idea that a precinct is so small, the idea that it was so, that it was so tight-knit, that you would go in there. And I can remember this even in my own life. I can remember going in and you see the same people working the elections. And she says, oh, hey, Jack, I just saw your mom in this morning. She came in earlier. I think your dad's coming by later. And it's going to, and this was the way. This was the way that we made it all work. But instead, somewhere along the line, it all got changed. It all got changed around. And that's what I'm saying we need to fix. We got a lot going on out there, folks. And also, it's Pride Month. How are you celebrating? Did your favorite branch of the United States military get visited by the Pride Ferry yet this week? Well, my branch, the United States Navy, my beloved U.S. Navy, it was interesting. So they had the Pride colors up for one day on their Twitter account. They went rainbow, but then they switched back one day after. Now, we don't know if that's because somebody, I don't know who would do this, on Twitter was cyberbullying them, or is this the new policy that you're only going to be up for one day, you're only going to be prideful for one day, and then you switch? Because we saw the exact same thing from MLB, Major League Baseball. They went full in on Pride. And by the way, this is, I don't know, what do you call this? The progress flag, the bio PC flag, because they have the one that has the original rainbow plus the pride flag, plus the transgender flag, plus the brown stripe and the black stripe. So they're making sure to get every single division or gender, racial, et cetera, representation in. But I got to say, you know, some of you guys, you're not going that hard. You know, Major League Baseball, you've only got, for example, one of your teams is celebrating the drag nuns. And shouldn't it really be every Major League Baseball team showing their inclusion, showing their wonderful, being sarcastic, if you haven't told, in June 16th, coming up, the LA Dodgers, and they're going ahead with this. In fact, one of these disgusting, anti-Catholic, anti-Christian, anti-Jesus, anti-religion members of this hate group was going up and flying a pride flag in LA. I saw the video yesterday. And you see, I have this LA, I don't know if she's a manager, administrator, you know, county commissioner comes up. Let's bring the sister, as if it's totally normal. It looked like a scene out of a movie, out of some like twisted version of the, you know, Dylan Mulvaney Hunger Games or something, where she's like, bring the sister up and we're going to raise the pride flag. And then the pride flag goes up and this, and everybody acts like, oh, it's a little clap, 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 clap with a little bob haircut. This is what our country is devolved into. This is how bad we've gotten, so far away from any basic. Wait, do we actually have the clip of this? Wait, someone's telling me we have the clip of this.
If we have into it, Ukraine. How do you say that? And then you also have said that if you're president, you can end this very quickly.
Yeah, I'd say how? If I'm president, and by the way, this is a much worse position than before it started. Before it started, it was easy. He wasn't going to do it. And I had conversations. And it was always the apple of his eye. I mean, I could see that. But I said, you're not going to do it. And if you do it, we're going to have problems like you've never had before. He understood. I said things. He said, you don't mean that. I said, I mean it 100%. And he didn't totally believe me, but he believed me 10%. And that's all he had to do. He knew that there was going to be a problem.
Can I just say,
and President
Xi, you're implying something here. You basically said I'd obliterate you. Is that what you said?
I said things that were very bad, very nasty. And
kind of like what?
And, you know, honestly, I got along. And he said, you don't mean that. It had to do with Moscow. He said, you don't mean that. I said, I do. I'll never talk about it again, but I do. He said, you don't mean it. You don't mean it. And we then went on to other subjects. But I don't think he believed me, but he believed me 10%. That's all he had to believe me. 5% would be good enough. But I had the same conversation with President Xi about Taiwan, President Xi of China.
You know, I watched both of the candidates out on the campaign trail yesterday. There's other candidates out there, but we know that this is really a horse race between DeSantis and Trump right now. Though actually in South Carolina, Nikki Haley is running neck and neck with Ron DeSantis. Of course, that makes sense. She was the governor there. But when you hear that crowd, I think the real story of the Trump town hall in Iowa last night, what it was Iowa, right? Yeah, it was Iowa, that the crowd was the real star in a sense, because even after all, it's been 8 years, folks. It's been 8 years since the golden escalator. And if anything, it feels like that resonance that this audience has, that the people of this country have for Trump, for President Trump. If anything, it's increasing.
As students across the country graduate from colleges and universities, I'd like to highlight a place where our young people receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. When these students graduate, they have studied the great books, the history of Western civilization in America, and the meaning and the history of the Constitution. Can you guess which college I'm talking about? That's right. It's my favorite college, Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty. And it holds true to that mission today, while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. And the best part, you can learn from Hillsdale free. That's right, for free through Imprimis by taking online courses on the American history, Constitution, and other subjects. See for yourself. Learn more at charlieforhillsdale.com, charlieforhillsdale.com.
I want to hear your thoughts on this ballot harvesting question, because I understand. I understand that it's different. I understand that it's not the way that we've done things in the past. But unfortunately, and keep in mind, I'm not talking about the 38 states that Republicans control. I'm talking about those key swing states that are going to be a must win, regardless of who the nominee is, regardless of who ends up coming out on top. President Trump is ahead in all the polls, seeing some movement on the second tier. So we'll see. It looks like it'll be Trump. But even if it's not him, okay, even if it's not, it doesn't matter from this perspective, because while we're so focused on the strategic, Democrats and the left have been fighting back and winning at the tactical level. However, there is a development in this, and the Washington Free Beacon has the story, even based on reporting from the New York Times. You guys have to see this one. And this is something that Charlie even sent me this morning. That was the first place I saw it, because this is huge. Listen to this. Even millennials are turning Republican, data shows. So that, remember the whole idea that we always said, that it was sort of the refrain out there that, you know, these colleges are crazy. They'll get off the campus. They'll get to the real world. They'll start having a paycheck. They'll start having to pay taxes. They'll start having a house. They'll start having kids. And eventually the millennials will become more conservative. Keep in mind, this is a group. This is an age group that voted for Barack Obama by 30 points. 30 points. However, now, if you look at the findings, they're only plus five, or in some cases, plus 4D. That means it's closer, much closer to a 50-50 split among millennials. Why is this? And now, Nate Cohen of the New York Times, he's their chief political analyst. Look, I think it actually does go back to economics. And Andrew Breitbart has his famous adage, his now, I would say, iconic adage, that politics is downstream of culture. Well, if I could add anything to that, all I would say is that culture is downstream of economics. The millennial generation was hit, no, certainly wasn't hit with the most, terrible situation that we've ever seen. We didn't go through Vietnam. We didn't go through World War II. But economically, millennials did take a hit, took a huge hit. One of those was the Iraq War. One of those was the Great Recession. And when the Great Recession hit, and the bailouts of the big banks and the massive money printing and the massive overspending hit, a lot of millennials went back to college and they saddled themselves on with more debt. And then when they got out, not me, by the way, I joined the military. And when they got on into the workforce, they realized that they couldn't afford rent. They couldn't afford to get married. They couldn't afford household formation. So all of those things were put off. All of those things were delayed. You're not seeing this with Zoomers, by the way. You're actually seeing Zoomers follow a much closer to the traditional trend. But for millennials, family formation, household formation, marriage, all of these indicators of sort of moving from that adolescence into adulthood were delayed. And of course, if you know anything about millennials, what do they all try to do? They all try to remain adolescents forever. Different conversation. But listen to this. While millennials overwhelmingly backed Obama, only half those same voters now in their 30s or early 40s voted for Joe Biden in 2020, according to Time's estimates. Exit polls showed an even more drastic shift, with Biden winning by just 51-45 among voters who were 18 to 27 in 2008. That same group of voters, by the way, for the record, wrote in my dad that year, was not going to vote for John McCain. That same group of voters preferred Democratic congressional candidates by just 10 points. This, while Cohen wrote the findings, may not seem stunning, as almost every cohort of voters under 50 has shifted towards the right over the last decade. They cut sharply against a long-held Democratic article of faith. For 20 years, they've been saying that this is the coalition of the ascendant. Young voters, blacks, Hispanics, women would enshrine Democrats as the eternal majority. The eternal majority. Well, you know something? Organizations like Turning Point USA, like Turning Point Action, that have been out there standing in the gap, standing in the breach, going specifically to these campuses, going to all. And by the way, this was not there. Turning Point USA was not there when I was going through college. I wish it had been, but it wasn't. We had some other organizations, but none of them had the same vitality. None of them had the same activism. None of them had the same grassroots grit that Turning Point does. And by focusing on these voters and now going and continuing to focus on Zoomers coming up through college now, there is a huge opportunity, an arbitrage opportunity for the right, for Republicans, for conservative victory by going to them with a pragmatic message.
All right, I got an important thing to share with you. You were probably tired about all these left-wing progressive companies. And you're probably exhausted with trying to keep up with all their virtue signaling and their woke nonsense. It's a question, right? Why has corporate America decided to say, we hate you, to their customers? I mean, I see Adidas. Adidas might as well have a big sign that says, we hate you. Look, progressive left-wing companies are taking over the market, and it's time for us to fight back. I want to tell you about a company I really care about, run by a friend of mine who's a great American, and they're growing and they need your help. And it's very important. Okay. Look, we don't have to fund these companies, the left-wing companies. We finally have an alternative. Public square. We have a solution. I hear from people all the time, Charlie, how do we fight back? Charlie, where are the options? It's very simple. It's publicsq.com. Join the movement of millions of patriotic Americans who love truth, our country, and our Constitution at publicsq.com. I use this app all the time when I'm traveling and also my local neighborhood. It's an app and a website where you can get connected to tens of thousands of businesses from all different industries that share your values like life, family, and freedom. Michael, who runs Public Square, does a fabulous job, and it's free to join as a consumer or a business owner, and you can get started today at publicsq.com. Download the app now. That's publicsq.com. How are we going to fight woke capital? How are we going to fight these progressive companies? How are Public Square? They do a fabulous job. I think the world of them. They're in the arena fighting back. If you are a business owner, download the app. If you are interested in supporting companies aren't woke, download the app. If you are traveling, you want to find a coffee shop that is not woke, download the app or go to publicsq.com. I'm 100% behind them. You're going to hear me talk about them a lot. It's time for us to join forces and build the parallel economy. Public Square, I have vetted them. I've got to know them really well. I've looked at the company deeply. Fabulous people, ethical Christian, strong conservatives. PublicSQ.com. Go there right now. Download the app. It is free. It's a free app. Free to join. Especially if you're a business owner, go to PublicSQ.com.
Our next couple of guests that I want to bring on as a guest when I am guest hosting on the Charlie Kirk Show, it is, of course, Charlie Kirk himself, as well as Darren Beatty of Revolver News. What's up, guys? Charlie, have you ever been a guest on your own show before?
Once before with Alex Marlowe. But Jack, thank you for filling in. Happy to be a passenger on this train. Darren, welcome. And most importantly, thank you to our incredibly flexible and tough, they're really tough tech team. I got to tell you, the Wi-Fi situation, the Chinese must have hacked our grid or something. It was an inexplicable thing. It's like everything goes out. We're running around like crazy. It is a miracle. So thank you, guys. I will not say your names, but thank you. So, Jack, go ahead.
Yeah, no, well, I want to get Darren in. And just as we were going up, happened to see, and maybe we can just kind of kick off what you guys think about this, that it looks like Elon Musk has invited, so over on Twitter, which seems to be the center of almost everything, at least that's not on Rumble these days, he has invited RFK Jr. to a Spaces discussion. Now, we saw the Spaces with Ron DeSantis last week. RFK Jr. had replied, yes, how's Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern? So it looks as though we're seeing a booking and an announcement going on right now. And the question is partially about the role of Twitter as, I mean, look, Twitter's already going to be in the history books because of Donald Trump and his use of it in 2016. But also, I wanted to ask you guys what you think the effect of the Kennedy, or if you think there's been an effect of the Kennedy president or, you know, presidential campaign on this populist left. It kind of used to be the role that Bernie played. And yet all of a sudden, you know, here comes RFK in, and, you know, because Bernie basically lost his credibility. But, you know, maybe I'm going too far. What do you guys think?
Darren?
Well, as I've said before, I wholeheartedly welcome RFK's participation in the 2024 cycle. I think he brings to the table a valuable perspective. His big thing, as far as I'm aware, is COVID, or although I think he expanded beyond that, but simply his position on COVID, I think, is critical to inject, no pun intended, into the national conversation, especially, you know, on the left. You know, you point out he's sort of a counterpart to Bernie, a much improved version of Bernie, actually, but he brings that sort of populist accountability to the Democrats, and the contrast between RFK and Biden is quite interesting. And it looks like in you know, every time Biden takes a spill, every time he takes a stumble, you know, every time you know, he soils his diapers, so to speak, there's a lot of chatter on the left saying, gee, why aren't we going to open up this primary process? So I think it adds a little bit of pressure there. You know, if the Democrats open it up, then that's great. It's sort of a game changer. But if they don't, it's going to aggravate a lot of people. And so I think from a strategic perspective, from our point of view, it's good that he's in there, but also from a substantive perspective, because insofar as his main issue is COVID, which I think it's fair to say, as far as I can tell, he's right on the money when it comes to COVID. And so I think it's really valuable to have that perspective in the conversation.
Well, Charlie, you're an expert on mass movements. You're an expert on political trends. Let me ask you kind of the same question, but from a different angle. Do you think that RFK Jr., does his entrance in the race, does this poison the well for Biden with any demographic, any stripe of voters, and meaningfully, is it a net negative or a net positive for the right or for the left?
I think both. One of the most important things that we need to do is always move the Overton window. And as soon as you run for president, you're immediately taken more seriously. You know, RFK, he knows what he has, and what he has is a revered and quite honestly sanctified last name in upper middle class white liberal circles, especially in the intelligentsia, which is Kennedy. And so being from Camelot, he now has to be taken seriously immediately. More so than, I mean, Marianne Williamson, you know, the crystal woman or whatever, like the chakra thing. It's just no one takes that seriously. But with Kennedy, it's different.
The Orb Queen. Yeah, are you disparaging the Orb Queen, Charlie?
I'm not disparaging. I mean, I wish her luck, right? But she should be in the Far East somewhere teaching yogi retreats, right? It's not exactly running for the American presidency. Kennedy's different, though, right?
So Kennedy's.
Yeah, the media has to figure out how to deal with Kennedy because he's relentless. He knows his stuff, right? The Kennedy does have, you know, the issue with his voice, which people try to mock and make fun of. But he actually uses it to his advantage for his worldview, which he believes actually was because of a vaccine injury. Again, that's his opinion. He certainly has some contrarian views on vaccines. I find them interesting. I don't know if he's right or not. We've had him on the show. I love what he talks about on the administrative state. I love what he talks about fourth branch of government. But what I think Kennedy is really doing, which is I think he knows he's probably not going to win the nomination. He's not going to say that. He won't acknowledge it or admit it. But he has wanted for a long time to be taken seriously. And now because he is a presidential candidate, and he's anybody but Biden, and he has a last name of Kennedy, you know, he has 19-20% in polling. Wall Street Journal just sat down for a long interview with him, and they challenge him on the vaccine stuff. He does a great job of pushing back on it, by the way. He's very, very well-read and incredibly articulate. And I don't really think some of the counter-arguments are nearly as much punch, because they immediately just try to call him names and all this, but he really understands the topics. But putting the vaccine thing aside, because that's what people know him for, he also is, I think, one of the most articulate and deep thinkers when it comes to the threat of the administrative state, this unelected, unaccountable Leviathan, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Department of Justice. I mean, I think that's top line issue, whoever becomes president. So what is RFK doing? He is moving the Overton window. I think he could potentially have a bridge between some center left Democrats that are looking for somebody on, you know, the political sphere that thinks differently than kind of this corporatist Democrat party to Democrat perspective. And I think it helps the Republican side because I was at an event in Idaho recently and I said, what do you guys think of Nikki Haley? Boo, people are going nuts. What do you think of Mitt Romney? They go even crazier. What do you think of RFK Jr.? The place goes nuts. They love him. I say, okay, we are under a kind of mass hypnotism of the uniparty, where we're supposed to hate Democrats and love Republicans. Again, that's the kind of talking point, mockingbird media stuff, right, Jack? Every Republican good, every Democrat bad. Meanwhile, they all do the same stuff. I'm telling you, the grassroots aren't buying that nonsense. When I talk to the grassroots, they have more good things to say about a Camelot Kennedy Democrat than someone who calls himself a Republican or herself a Republican.
I've experienced the exact same thing.
This means, I'm telling you right now, this means that there's an 80-90% populist nationalist movement that I don't know if it will ever materialize. It can. There's a chance that this thing just explodes into a unbelievably historic William Jennings Bryan Teddy Roosevelt moment. There's no guarantee of that because the crime syndicate running DC is incredibly powerful. But RFK Jr., he knows. Yeah, go ahead.
Is what you're talking about potentially a fusion or a coalition, maybe even a fusion ticket, perhaps?
Yeah, I potentially. I mean, Bannon has floated that. I don't think that's a great idea, I'll be honest, just because, I mean, you kind of have to game out what if that person becomes president. RFK is not a social conservative. I am. And so you have to kind of think about that. But I think conceptually Bannon is super smart and he's ahead of the curve as always, where he's saying, hold on a second. There's more agreement between the Trump base and the RFK Jr. base. It's not left versus right. It's top versus bottom, right? It's the people in charge that are crushing the ordinary normal people, the muscular class. It's the laptop and Zoom class that did lockdowns, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, COVIDian tyranny, trying to crush the everyday people, right? And so I think it's really important that we're able to liberate the conversation. I'm fully in support of RFK Jr. running against Joe Biden, because the other thing that I think is the fraud of the Democrat Party. If you want to talk about how do we beat the woke? How do we do this? The fraud of the Democrat Party is that the vast majority of their base have deeply held beliefs that they do not want a small set of corporations running the country. Yet the Democrat Party elite want a small set of corporations running the country. That is a recipe for disaster in the Dem, and they know it. That's why they have to talk about transing the kids and grooming and LGBT and the race stuff. That is all a synthetic veneer. And here's RFK, who basically just dodges the woke stuff and talks about the actual issue that we're living under a corporate oligarchy. I'm telling you, we're going to win. We can win big time on the issues, 2024, 26, 28, if we ballot harvest and all that. Let's put that aside. Let's pretend we get the machinery right. We can win on the actual political consensus building, Jack, if and when we realize the Democrat Party is currently the energy the Democrat Party speaks like AOC on corporations, but acts like Chuck Schumer when it comes to pharmaceutical companies. That is incompatible and it's unsustainable. And if RFK Jr. is able to kind of rip off the fraud and expose how the Democrat Party has basically become shills for the top 100 companies and has become basically a place to park our donations and we'll give you whatever you want in the government, man, that he could do some serious damage to the Democrat coalition.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell, great American patriot, has MyPillow. It's launching MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. For my exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free offer with promo code Kirk and get your best sleep ever now. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in America and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to buy the buy one, get one free offer. Enter promo code Kirk, call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow 2.0 now. That's MyPillow.com. Again, they have a knife edge seam, no gusset, available in four loft levels, made in America. So check it out right now, MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square, promo code Kirk.
Darren, what do you think? Do you see, are you bullish on this idea of a populist left, populist right kind of coalition to, going forward, at least electorally?
Right. No, it's a great question. And I guess bullish would have to be, you know, relative to reasonable expectations. I think we can get some mileage out of it, more mileage than we've gotten. And again, on net, I think it's a huge positive that RFK's, part of the conversation, part of the race. And, you know, as we talked about, even, you know, 2015, 2016, the idea of some kind of broader reconfiguration or realignment of the politics became a central part of the conversation with, you know, with Trump on one side and Bernie on the other side. I do think there are limitations to this. You know, RFK himself has kind of vehemently rejected the notion of being on a ticket with Trump. But at the same time, he's going on media platforms and basically speaking to Trump's base. So there's kind of a mixed message there. Ultimately, though, you see a lot of these people on the left who are the kind of principled anti-corporatist, anti-military industrial complex. From what I've seen so far, there is a limit. There's a line that they won't cross. They don't want to enter the full pain box associated with, actually, being on the right. And so far, that's imposed certain amount of limitations. You see exceptions. To finish the point, I think the whole realignment idea has a genuine underlying substance to it. But I think we kind of, through wishful thinking, maybe exaggerating what it can deliver. There's a lot of commonality in terms of just challenging the establishment, and that's where the overlap comes from. And we can articulate this in terms of the national security state, in terms of, the bureaucracies, in terms of, criticizing the media, criticizing corporations and so forth. But where it really starts to get hot is when you get into those issues that invite the pain box. And people are frankly scared. Even a lot of people on the left, they find it safer to speak in the language of, oh, we're against corporations, this or that. But when you get into the details, they're not quite prepared to align with somebody like Trump, who genuinely is taking on the establishment on all cylinders. In the case of RFK, there's a similar underlying dynamic, but it is inflected by the point that he's taking on the COVID issue, which I think is especially sacrosanct and protected. So he's getting maybe more of the pain box, more of the treatment generally reserved for conservatives because he's touching the third rail of COVID. But generally speaking, the people on the left, there's actually kind of an aggressive version of affirmative action in a way for people who are non-woke from the left. And again, you can get some mileage out of them. It's worth building those alliances and seeing how far that goes. But I think we should also do it with managed expectations, because so few people are really ready for that pain box of the sort that comes at you when you speak and act like Donald Trump.
That's exactly right. But, and Charlie, you and I were chatting about this as well, that we are seeing some movement, at least in the corporate world, because we can see the external factors. And externally, I was talking about this earlier, that and I said this on Human Events yesterday, I have not seen, with a few very notable exceptions, Bud Light, Target, the LA Dodgers, I have not seen this massive outpouring of the Rainbow Pride celebration this year the way we have in years past. And it seems like even just for some of them, MLB, my beloved United States Navy, they changed the Twitter for one day, they changed it right back. Are we seeing Pride Month in retreat, Charlie?
Maybe. And the question is, how big of a victory is that? I mean, it is the state-run religion right now, right? It is the official orthodoxy of the regime, which is LGBT kind of converging with race nonsense that creates this smokescreen type distraction away from us talking about the middle class disappearing and people's purchasing power evaporating and our borders remaining wide open. So they have to keep these kind of holy relics of LGBT worship through the rainbow flag and race politics. But to see, this is fascinating, to see major corporations and the military back off a little bit, that goes against kind of some of the core dogmas that has driven the uniparty left for quite some time, right? They push forward on, they always play offense, they keep the pressure on, they use the enemy's counterattack to their own advantage, to use Saul Alinsky's own rules. So this is interesting. And is there a little bit of shame that is finally getting introduced into the Pride equation? This is an open question. I mean, you have Elon Musk, and it's a big deal. It's worthy of repeating. I mean, the Daily Wire thing was confusing, and there was like a mutiny among some of the engineers. But Elon Musk came out, the world's richest man, and he said that misgendering somebody is not hate speech, and you're allowed to do it. In fact, Elon, I don't know if anyone was following it, or Jack, you covered it. It was this whole thing. Daily Wire wanted to put "What is a woman" on Twitter. Fabulous film. Matt Walsh did Hero's work. Best film in the last couple of years on the topic, without a doubt. And Twitter pseudo-censored it, and Elon said they weren't. It was this whole thing. Elon, to his great credit, though, has now re-promoted it on the main feed, saying every parent needs to watch this video, and it's seen by millions and millions of people. So I think you mentioned it earlier, Jack. But that's a blow to kind of the Pride regime. Target is now going to be kind of reclassified. That's my Twitter exchange with Elon Musk here today. And is going to be reclassified as a bearish stock. Bud Light is down 25 to 30%. there. I mean, the CNN headline here that we said that we were going to lead with if, you know, we had Wi-Fi, was that, oh boy, Blake said it earlier, is that all of a sudden companies are afraid that there is a price to embracing pride. Everybody in the audience, this is a sign of hope. This goes to show that these wacky radical ideas do not have permanency by default, that you have agency, that you have purchasing power, that you stopping shopping and supporting good companies, it's starting to make an impact.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I guess what I would suggest is that potentially that because you have people like an RFK, like some of these center left types that are out there banging this drum, and it's feeding into this narrative that creates the grassroots groundswell. And that you need the moms. And there's so moms there. And you were talking about this earlier this week. The TikTok moms, the Instagram moms, the momfluencers who, and by the way, as we talked about with Zoom, with millennials and Zoomers are trending to the right. It is stuff like this, that if you've got children under 10, I think all of us here have children under 10, that this is stuff that directly affects us. It directly affects our families. We realize how crazy it is. We realize that when you are in those crucial years of family formation, when your kids are that young, they don't know anything about the world. You know, they don't know anything other than what you're telling them how the world is, and they believe you and they trust you. So if you are going to start introducing this stuff, like the Little League, by the way, the Little League baseball, which last time I checked is not for adults. Maybe Ron DeSantis could tell us about that as a former Little League World Series champion, could tell us why the Little League is now pushing the Pride Month that's out there as well, if they are not doing this for the purpose of introducing sexual and sexualized topics towards children.